We're continuing our study in the book of Genesis. We're still in the first chapter of Genesis. In our last lesson, we'd gotten through the fifth verse of this first chapter. So let us begin now with Genesis 1, verse 6. And I'd like to read verses 6, 7, and 8. And God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." And God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning were the second day. On the first day, the earth was still mostly composed of water. Other materials were in solution or suspension with the water, mainly in the liquid state. Some of these waters were to be separated from the greater mass of waters, and placed high above the rotating globe with a great space separating them from the waters below. The lower waters would provide the water base for living flesh and earth processes. The upper waters would provide a sort of protective canopy, a tent to dwell in, if you please, for earth's inhabitants. And the space between would provide an atmosphere reservoir to maintain the health of life. The power required to effect such a tremendous separation, once again, came from God's spoken word. Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. The word firmament is the Hebrew word rakia, R-A-Q-I-A, meaning expanse or spread out thinness. It may well be equivalent with our modern technical term space, practically the same as we discussed earlier when talking about the meaning of heaven. In fact, the passage clearly says that God called the firmament heaven. This statement seems to confirm the fact that firmament and heaven are essentially synonymous terms, both meaning space. Either space in general or a particular region of space, depending on the context. There are three uses of the word heavens in the scripture. One is the atmospheric heaven, Jeremiah 4:25. Secondly is the heaven of the stars, Jeremiah 13:10. And thirdly, the heaven of God's throne, Hebrews 9:24. Likewise, the term firmament is also used in each of these same three ways. First of all, the atmospheric heaven, Genesis 1:20. Secondly, the area of the stars, Genesis 1:17. And thirdly, God's throne, Ezekiel 1:22. The term heavens of heavens is also used frequently, probably referring to the entire universe, the space containing all space, as found in 2 Chronicles 2 verse 6. The firmament referred to in this particular passage is obviously the atmosphere. Unfortunately, the English word has been interpreted by many to refer to a solid dome across the sky. Consequently, this idea has been used by the critics and skeptics as evidence that Genesis is out of step with science. But neither the Hebrew word nor any of the passages in which it occurs suggest such an idea. A firmament is simply thin, stretched out space. Separated by the firmament or atmosphere, the two bodies of water henceforth were ready for their essential functions in sustaining future life on earth. The actual process of separation was possibly implemented by converting a portion of the liquid water into the vapor state. This could cause the watery suspension to also release the other gases, the components of the atmosphere, which became the firmament holding up the lighter water vapor above. The waters above the firmament probably made a vast blanket of water vapor above the troposphere, 7 to 12 miles above the earth, and possibly above the stratosphere, which is above the troposphere, in the region known as the ionosphere, and extending far into space. They could not have been clouds of water droplets, which now float in the atmosphere, because the scripture says they were above the firmament. Furthermore, there was no rain upon the earth in those days, Genesis 2:5, nor any bow in the cloud, Genesis 9:13, both of which must have been present if these upper waters were simply the clouds we find in the present hydrologic system. The concept of a water canopy over the earth before the flood has appeared in many writings, both ancient and modern. Some of the scholars have visualized it as a system of rings like those of the planet Saturn, made up possibly of ice particles orbiting the Earth. Others have described it as an orbiting shell of ice or liquid water. Some have thought of it as merely dense banks of cloud surrounding the Earth, possibly somewhat like the cloud over the present planet Venus. The cloud cover over Venus is now believed to be composed of carbon dioxide rather than water. But it seems like the most likely cover over the Earth before the flood was a vapor canopy. One, because of the way the two bodies of water were separated. Two, and it would have to be transparent in order for the heavenly bodies to give light upon the Earth and to be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, Genesis 1:14 and 15. And thirdly, water vapor, even in vast amounts, is invisible, whereas clouds, fog, and so forth are composed of minute droplets of liquid water and are therefore opaque. They're not transparent. Also, let us note that a vapor canopy would be more easily maintained aloft and would serve much more effectively as an efficient sustainer of vigorous life conditions on Earth. Let us look at some of the functions that such a canopy over the Earth would provide. First of all, since water vapor has the ability to both transmit incoming solar radiation and to retain and spread much of the radiation reflected from the Earth's surface, it would serve as a global greenhouse, maintaining a basically uniformly pleasant, warm temperature all over the world. Secondly, with nearly uniform temperatures, great air mass movements would be inhibited and wind storms would be unknown. Thirdly, with no global air circulation, the hydrologic cycle of the present world could not be implemented, and there could be no rain except from directly over the bodies of water from which it might have evaporated. Fourthly, with no global air circulation, and therefore no turbulence or dust particles transported to the upper atmosphere, the water vapor in the canopy would have been stable and not precipitate itself. Fifthly, the planet would have been maintained not only at uniform temperatures, but also at comfortable uniform humidities by means of daily local evaporation and condensation, like dew or ground fog, in each day-night cycle. Sixthly, the combination of warm temperature and adequate moisture everywhere would promote the growth of extensive stands of lush vegetation all over the world with no barren deserts or ice caps. Seventhly, a vapor canopy would also be highly effective in filtering out ultraviolet radiations, cosmic rays, and other destructive energies from outer space. These are known to be the source of both organ and genetic mutations, which decrease the life expectancy of the individual and the species respectively. Thus, the canopy would contribute greatly to both human and animal health and longevity. Eighthly, some have objected to the idea of a heavy vapor canopy because of the great increase in atmospheric pressure which it would cause at the Earth's surface. But rather than being a problem, this effect would contribute still further to the health and longevity. Modern biomedical research is increasingly proving that such hyperbaric pressures are very effective in combating disease and in promoting good health generally. There should be no problem with organisms living under high external pressures, providing their internal pressures had time to adjust correspondingly. And ninthly, later, when needed, these upper waters would provide the reservoir from which God would send the great flood to save the godly remnant from the hopelessly corrupt population of that day. The content of the water vapor in the present atmosphere, if all precipitated, would cover the Earth only to the depth of about 1 inch. Although the waters above the firmament were condensed and rained out in the flood, they will apparently be restored in the new Earth which God will create. Revelation 21, verse 1, there was no more sea. Psalm 148, verses 4 and 6, speaks of the waters that be above the heavens, which, like the stars, will be established forever and ever. Now we move into the next section of the first chapter of Genesis, verses 9 and 10. Let me read those verses. And God said, "Let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas, and God saw that it was good. The waters under the firmament still were in the form of a shoreless ocean, in which all other material elements were randomly dissolved or suspended. Water is known as the universal solvent even today. On the third day of creation, a third act of division was accomplished by God. The light had been divided from the darkness on the first day. The waters above the firmament were divided from the waters below the firmament on the second day. And now the dry land from the lower waters on the third day. Once again, the powerful agent which brought about this great work was the Word of God. Let the dry land appear, and it was so. Tremendous chemical reactions got underway as dissolved elements precipitated and combined with others to form the vast complex of minerals and rocks making up the solid earth, its crust, its mantle, and its core. The materials so formed tended in general to arrange themselves in such a way that the heavier materials were sinking and the lighter materials were floating, with many substances still in suspension or in solution. There were many exceptions to this in local areas due to the complex forces changing the Earth's surface due to the tremendous energies which were operating. Great Earth movements also occurred due to the response to great changes in temperature and other forces. At last, surfaces of solid Earth appeared above the waters, and an intricate network of channels and reservoirs opened up in the crust to receive the waters running off the rising continents. Some of these reservoirs were directly connected to the waters running off the higher ground. Others retreated to great subterranean chambers within the crust itself. All were interconnected by a complex network of tubes and waterways, so that actually they were all gathered together unto one place. Although in one place, the waters had assembled in numerous distinct basins, so that God called this gathering together of the waters seas. And this word seas is actually a plural term. These were not the same as our present seas, since the earth's arrangement of land and seas was completely changed at the time of the flood. At this time, the foundations of the earth had been laid, and God called the dry land earth. We read about this in other places in the Bible. Psalms 102, verse 25. Of old thou hast laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of thy hands. Job 38, verse 4. Where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if thou hast understanding. Zechariah 12, verse 1. The burden of the word of the Lord for Israel saith, The Lord which stretcheth forth the heavens, and layeth the foundation of the earth, and formeth the spirit of man within him. Isaiah 48:13, Mine hand also hath laid the foundation of the earth, and my right hand hath spanned the heavens. When I called unto them, they stand up together. The name used here for earth, the Hebrew word Eretz, E-R-E-T-Z, is the same as the word in Genesis 1, verses 1 and 2, showing that the formless matter originally created is the same matter as used in the finally constituted solid ground. All this was accomplished during the first part of the third day of creation. Now let us read the next three verses of this first chapter of Genesis, verses 11 through 13. And God said, Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after its kind, whose seed is in itself, upon the earth, and it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, an herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit whose seed was in itself after his kind, and God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the third day. At this time, rocks and minerals had been formed, but in addition to that, a layer of fertile soil covered the land, sand, silt, and clay-sized particles in an ideally graded mixture with abundant chemical nutrients along with soil moisture. Then God spoke again, this time gathering certain of the chemical elements of the earth into highly complex systems, each with a detailed informational program built into its chemical structure, which could now specify the reproduction of other units just like itself. There is no evidence that these systems were made with any form of consciousness, but each did have its seed in itself, and so had the ability of reproducing its kind. We see here three main types of plants mentioned: grasses, herbs, and trees. Whether this classification corresponds to modern botanical classification and nomenclature or not is not important. The modern botanical nomenclature is man-made and given according to man's whims, whereas these biblical divisions are obvious and natural. The three are intended to cover all types of plants, and these are the most obvious of all inclusive categories. The term grass refers to all ground-covering, spreading vegetation. It possibly could also include microscopic plants. Herbs has to do with all bushes and shrubs. Trees would be the category including all large woody plants, including fruit-bearing trees. Let us also note that these plants were made not as seeds, but as full-grown plants whose seed was in themselves. So the description given here of these plants is that they were full-grown plants with seeds on them. The processes operating during creation week were not the processes of our present time. But in the beginning, these were processes of creating and making. So they are not the same as the present processes at all. Adam was created as a full-grown man. The trees were created as full-grown trees. And the whole universe was made a functioning entity, complete and fully developed, right from the beginning. The apparent age that man today might calculate in terms of present processes would undoubtedly be vastly different from the true age as revealed by the Creator. In verse 11, we have the first mention of seed and kind. Implanted in each created organism was a seed programmed to cause the reproduction of that type or kind of organism to continue. The modern understanding of the extreme complexities of the so-called DNA molecule and the genetic code contained in it has reinforced the biblical teaching of the stability of kinds. Each type of organism has its own unique structure of the DNA and can only specify the reproduction of the same kind. There is a large amount of variation which can occur within each kind, which will bring about the generation of distinct individuals and even of many varieties within the kind, but nevertheless not allowing the evolution of new kinds. A great deal of horizontal changes are easily possible, but no vertical changes. It is interesting to note that the phrase, after his kind, occurs 10 times in the first chapter of Genesis. The use of this term shows us that there was definitely a limitation on the amount of variations which could occur within each kind. Each organism was to produce after its own kind, but not after some other kind. That's the Hebrew word for men, M-I-N. Exactly what this term kind refers to in the modern classification system may be a matter to be determined after future research. It may eventually be found that the men or kind is often identical with the species, sometimes with the genus, and possibly even with the family. Practically never is variation possible outside the biologic family. It becomes increasingly clear that evolutionary doctrine that all living things are interrelated by common ancestry and descent is proven to be false by these biblical statements as well as by all established scientific observations made to date. The permanence of the created kinds is further supported by 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 37 through 39. This reads, "And that which thou sowest not the body that shall be, but bare grain. It may chance of wheat or some other grain, but God giveth it a body as it hath pleased him, and to every seed his own body. All flesh is not the same flesh, but there is one kind of flesh of men, another flesh of beasts, another of fishes, another of birds." The term kind is used more extensively in Leviticus chapter 11, verses 13 through 32. We also are told here that the formation of plants, even in such complex developments as fruit trees, was brought about before the creation of any form of animal life. This is obviously according to God's plan, but it does absolutely contradict the accepted evolutionary system, which has marine animals, both invertebrates and vertebrates, evolving hundreds of millions of years before the evolution of fruit trees and other higher plants. Furthermore, many plants require pollination by insects, but insects were not made until the sixth day of creation. This fact argues against the notion that the days of creation would have been possibly many long ages. The idea that God used evolution as a tool to bring about the creation is contrary to the Bible record of creation in practically every passage. The third time we read the phrase, God saw that it was good. This was proclaimed by God after the work of bringing light to the earth, verse 4, after the work of dividing the waters and establishing the land surfaces, verse 10, and now after the development of a plant cover for the land, verse 12. The fact that God saw that it was good indicates to us that the creation then was something that went according to God's plan. It was the way God wanted. Nothing got out of hand. Nothing was out of control. Nothing failed. It all worked the way God wanted to work, according to the time scale that he wanted to work on, and according to the end result that he wanted from it. And so we can feel good about this creation because the one who brought it about thought that it was good and said that it was good. Well, that concludes our lesson at this time. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friends.